Great. Okay.
Hi, did someone just join?
Melody Daniel, Hummus Point Family.
Hi, Melody.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Melody, that was a great presentation last week. We was in the Dr. Caroline John's St. Nick's this week. We usually start these off with a report from Washington and what's happened. Actually, we had a question this week when the new RFP is going to come out. We had originally hoped it's being under review, and we had originally hoped that it would be out in early October, but I think Joanne quote was Mother News. Well, do you want to give us a rundown of what you've heard from Washington?
Well, the latest that I heard, and this was in an email from headquarters, is that the 2013 RFP won't be coming out until December. They didn't give a date. They just said the month of December. So that's as much as I know. I don't know when the deadline for submittal is going to be or anything like that.
Normally, their normal schedule is they bring it out in November, and it's due in the springtime because they want to get they have to have the funds out before the beginning of the fiscal year. So it was a little later than we thought, but we'll keep tracking it to see. Anything else, Glo, this week? I think what Matthew had a conference call on job training.
Yeah, he had a conference call on job training, and actually one of the grantees, Chris Litzow from Wisconsin, gave one of the presentations. It was a webinar and turned out great. I don't know how many people they had, but I think it was quite a few. So that was this week. We're also getting ready for the all grantee meeting, which starts on Monday in Alexandria, Virginia. And we're very happy that Maddie Stanislaw, the assistant administrator for the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, is going to be able to come and give opening remarks and a welcome to everybody on Monday night. So we're excited about that. We have 104 people registered for the meeting, and I actually just got three more registrations about 5 minutes ago. So going to be close to 110 people there.
Is it too late for anyone on the call to, if they'd have to get to Washington or to Alexandria next
mm-hmm.
Monday, but if they could.
Yeah, it's not too late for people to come to the meeting. We can always take a last-minute registration for the meeting. The problem is getting them into the hotel. So the registrations that I just got, I will forward them on to my contact at the hotel, and we can hopefully get them a room. I don't know if it'll be at the group rate, but at least they'd be there. So, yeah, it's not too late.
Now, PLC members are eligible to go, and that's basically all of the grantees and graduates and alumni that are able to make it. And at that meeting, we have some general sessions of everybody. We talk about the major issues, which is job placement at this point, and then we break out into breakout sessions. We talk about everything we talk about in these PLCs, and then we also have a big session on the legal aspects and allowable and disallowable costs. So it's a good networking time, and get to know all the regional reps there, and the EPA headquarters people are all there. So if you can get to Alexandria, Glo, do you want to give your phone number in case anyone
sure.
is able to?
Sure. My phone number is 563-441-4081. And I will be here the rest of today and tomorrow, but our office is closed on Friday for District Staff Development Day, so I won't be here on Friday. And then Monday, of course, I will be traveling. My email address is ghanne@eicc.edu. Mike, you could put that in the notes, too.
Right. And we'll be sending some notes out to everybody on the list. We had some people join us. Could they let us know who's on?
Sabrina Jackson, JWB Green, LLC.
And I'm Catherine Hunanen, filling in for Elisa Manspizer from the Mount Washington Community Development Corporation.
Okay, great. For those of you who may not have heard, this RFP will be coming out probably around the end of the year, early December probably. But it's not too early to start because these do take a lot of time in terms of getting coordinated and getting partners and having some getting into the mayor's office and seeing if you could announce to people that you're planning on setting up a job training program or applying for funds. And we're going to be talking about that in future PLCs. Our next one is going to be on the 10th of October. And through this series of 10 of these PLCs, we're going to be talking about all of the different aspects of what it takes to start a program. And so with that, we're going to talk to Carol Ann. And one thing, last session when we talked to Hunter's Point and Melody, you guys were great. Hunter's Point, of course, has been a very interesting, as we said in the notes, it's almost an exaggerated or bigger than life case of what happens in every neighborhood, but on a much larger and bigger and amplified scale. And here was a community that was a strong, vibrant community, and the government came in during the war and ramped up shipbuilding, and a lot of people moved into the neighborhood. A lot of work came into the neighborhood, and then all of a sudden the government pulls out, and they left everything behind. And they left the Superfund sites, they left the brownfield sites, and it became a convenient place to start locating everything you couldn't locate everywhere else. The suburbs didn't want the power plant, so the power plants went down there. Where do we put a wastewater plant? Oh, let's put it down there. Where are we going to have the scrap yards? Well, let's put it down at Hunter's Point. So the people that live there who lost their jobs when the government pulled out, and also because of housing discrimination and gentrification, people ended up moving into this community, and there were no jobs. And here they had no jobs, but a whole lot of environmental degradation and pollution. And then here we are. The next step in their situation was now we find that it's one of the most valuable pieces of real estate in San Francisco because it's right on the bay. And now they want to come and gentrify it. And now what's going to happen? You know, you're going to bring in people from the outside to clean it up. You're going to push the people out that have endured all these issues for all the industrialization and degradation. So we've got people who've been victimized three times, and they're about the big victimization of now we're going to clean up your neighborhood, we're going to push you out. And the interesting thing about Hunter's Point was they have a strong community group that they started, and they decided they're going to do something about their neighborhood. And they're going to apply for an environmental job training grant, and they're going to get this training program going. Now, what's really neat about today's discussion is we're going to talk to a group, St. Nick's Alliance, who have been there, done that, and now are kind of in a different situation where St. Nick's, and Carolyn, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but way back in 75, you were developing, St. Nick's was developing community groups, and you had middle and low income groups, and you started people in your community, and you started bonding together. And you had the St. Nick's Alliance, and you felt that there was the same thing happening that happened at Hunter's Point, not to that extent, but all of a sudden scrap yards and people were starting to push stuff into your neighborhood. And I think you decided that you weren't going to allow this to degrade your neighborhood, that you were going to actually, this community of 9,000 people, you were going to actually do something about it. And way back in 70s and 80s, you were forming literacy groups and you were forming together. And then in 2002, I believe, you were awarded one of the first EPA job training grants that we're talking about today, way back then. And I believe by about 2006, you were graduating. I saw a statistic of 126 graduates from your community, and they were making anywhere from $13 to $30 an hour. And you actually And you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe, Carolyn, that you've been re-upped. In other words, you submitted competitive grants from 2002 to about 2010 five times, that you competed against everyone in the country, and you were awarded job training grants. But now you find yourself in a situation where your grant is running out. So I guess
Correct. Now
I'm going to kind of lob this over to you, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about what made you decide to go after these grants and a little bit about your community and your organization and where you find yourself now.
Okay. Well, you know, as you kind of mentioned, we are an older community that's really densely developed. We have a high concentration of heavy and light industry that's kind of distributed throughout the district, but concentrated in areas such as the Brooklyn Navy Yard, East Williamsburg, and, you know, Greenpoint Industrial Zones. We have a huge concentration of waste carting and transfer that happens in our community. And I guess, you know, based on, you know, our, the zip code, there are, I think, about 113 sites that produce air pollutants, 13 that release toxins, and 393 that report hazardous waste activities, and three that emit to local waterways. And there are two highly polluted industrial waterways that are slated for cleanup. One is the Newtown Creek and the other is the Gowanus Canal. Now, as a child, I grew up near the Gowanus Canal, so I'm, you know, many jokes about, you know, what you would find in the bottom if it was ever dredged of the, you know, the Gowanus Canal. But we've been, I think, up until 2010, really successful with, you know, with training and placing clients. The economy certainly has had its impact. The last year, we spent an inordinate amount of time meeting with employers and doing industry surveys to kind of find out what was going on with the industry, because we were having a really difficult time placing clients. And St. Nick's was awarded about a year ago through the Social Innovation Fund a grant for, you know, a sector. It's a research project, a national research project on sector strategies. And obviously we submitted based on the environmental remediation sector. So we need to recruit. It's a random assignment. So we need to recruit about 600 participants between last October and June 30th of 2013, because, it again, we need to train 300, but 300 go into our control group where MDRC, who is evaluating the research, will be able to hopefully ascertain that based on, you know, the services that St. Nick's is providing in terms of the wraparound services and the training, that our clients who are, you know, low income, unemployed, underemployed will have fared better than those individuals that are in the control group. But over the year, you know, as I mentioned, that, you know, we've had a lot of challenges with placement. A lot of our employers who were once open to hiring clients who had completed a program who had criminal histories are being much more selective, and consequently those that we've been accepting into training, we've had to become more selective, you know, to meet our employer needs. So it's been a struggle, and we've had to kind of revisit the types of training that we could offer under the umbrella of environmental remediation, because we knew that we weren't able to place in the more traditional types of placement opportunities that we had in the past. Unions, you know, obviously in New York City, unions play a big part, and they have an inordinate amount of people who are currently unemployed, so they weren't even accepting new members into the unions, which, you know, presented another challenge for us. So we took a look at what might fall under the umbrella in a very, very broad way. And we're, you know, doing some training in pest control, you know, green, obviously, and hazmat CDL, so that we're hoping that that gives us additional avenues in which to place some of our clients, you know, at decent salaries.
The now, are you, let's talk a little bit about, you're finding yourself and you're saying to me, you know, in fact, you're not going to be able to come to the annual meeting because your grant ends in 2 days. And
correct.
Are you going to have to drop the program, or are you going to try to salvage pieces of it? How are you going to handle this?
We're trying to salvage pieces of it because we have this current research project that I spoke to you about that runs for, it's a 3-year project, and we're into year two. So at this point, I have one more class scheduled for environmental remediation, which was our, you know, the standard offering of some, you know, the OSHA certifications through in January. But we were considering offering some advanced classes to people that were in the field, and we don't see the employment opportunities being available. So I'm now trying to find some other types of training that, you know, might fit under the environmental remediation umbrella that will afford us the opportunity to place the clients. I have 75 individuals right now that we've trained that we're waiting to find employment opportunities for.
Wow. And this is really anyone thinking of starting a program. These are very wise words. The fact is it's one thing to train them, another to find jobs for them. And you were extremely successful early on. A few years ago, it sounded like they were just snapping up your graduates.
That's right. And you know, and at some point we would even send clients, you know, out of state to job opportunities. But, you know, now whether it's the political climate or, you know, but a lot of those, a lot of the staffing agencies that seem to have more of the project-based opportunities are looking for people that are more local because they're no longer offering the per diem rate. You know, in addition, the salaries that were once attractive, you know, the hourly salary has now gone down. So, you know, in some ways it doesn't make sense to send someone, you know, across country for a job that's making, you know, $14 an hour. And then it's only going to last perhaps for 2 months because then, you know, what happens after that?
Sure.
We got a phone call about some opportunities that might be available in, I want to say, North Dakota. But, you know, again, it was all, on their part, it was purely exploratory. You know, the people are bidding on contracts, hoping that they get them, contractors that is, and then looking for a source of employees, labor force to, you know, to work on the contracts. I've been really hesitant to even entertain the thought of sending my clients for these project-based opportunities, especially if, you know, if they're not going to last for a fairly significant period of time. It's not fair to the client. You know, to all of a sudden be getting a paycheck and then, you know, a month later, nothing.
If anyone has any questions, just chime in. I had an interesting question about, it sounded like you were somewhat discouraged on ex-offender training, and there was a time when there was a big push on that, and we're very concerned about it. Some states have bonds, but sometimes even with a surety bonds, it's not enough. And are you kind of staying away from ex-offenders in your
program? we're really taking a serious look at the criminal history of the applicant that comes to us. Certainly individuals who have multiple felony convictions that are more recent, we're deciding that this might not be the best place for them in terms of training because, you know, again, I know that this is not a client that our employers are looking to hire. Mainly because, you know, there are so many people right now in the pool.
You really have to ration out your training because you only have so many slots and so many resources. So you really have to, when you're choosing your target audience, which we've been talking about, you really have to choose participants who have the best chance of success for their benefit as well as yours.
Right. And we're also looking for clients that have some kind of a related employment history, you know, where they've worked with their hands, they've done something perhaps in construction. We're finding that those that are looking for perhaps that, you know, that career switch, again, it becomes difficult to place that individual.
This is Scott from ECA in Philadelphia. I just had a quick question for you. When we were a WAP training provider for the Weatherization Assistance Program, and we were debating the same issue, we anecdotally had evidence that employers certainly frowned upon, if not were completely against hiring ex-offenders for certain positions. But we could never get them to publicly say it. Publicly, all that we could ever get them to say is we look at everything on a case-by-case basis. So we were kind of, because the employers didn't come out and openly say, you know, these people will not be considered for the position, we were obligated to give everyone an equal opportunity. Do you think that there is a way to make some headway with the employers, with the ex-offenders, or is it just, I think like you said earlier, it's such a buyer's market that they, you know, if they have equal candidates and one has a clean history, they're going to go with that individual?
I think that's exactly right. The latter, I think, is exactly right. And the fact, I mean, you know, I mean, right now it's a world where, you know, you're certainly being judged on your outcomes. You know, if I'm training, and one of the other
you want the highest placement number
exactly,
possible.
Exactly.
I got you.
Right. I mean,
right.
I've got no, you know, you have no choice, unfortunately. And this organization is it's a community-based organization, and we were heavily reliant on word of mouth to recruit applicants that came into us. That's always worked, okay? But obviously, if, you know, I have a criminal history, and I'm talking to a friend of mine who has a criminal history, I'm going to say to them, gee, you should go to St. Nick's because St. Nick's is going to help you. But now, you know, that's not necessarily the case. I mean, we can certainly, in terms of
do what you can.
That skill
right.
training, right, it's going to be a problem. Then to recruit this kind of volume where you're also dealing with a random assignment and it's up to the computer to say whether or not you're going into the program or into the control group presents a whole host of other kinds of challenges that,
I can imagine.
You know, you know, even for my staff who has been so committed to, you know, working with clients who have barriers to employment, this has presented somewhat of a little bit of a culture shift, you know, that they've had to adjust to.
Yeah, I
think with the change in the funding climate, a lot of organizations have had to make adjustments. In Philadelphia, we've seen that across the board from the workforce development system to the youth networks, to a host of soft services organizations. So the landscape is definitely changing pretty quickly.
The in terms of jobs, looking for jobs, one thing that EPA did this round for the first time was allow wastewater training to occur, and that appears to be one of the biggest potential sources for new jobs, because there are a huge number of people retiring that came on board in the 70s. It does require specific training, and it's very municipality dependent and often patronage dependent. So it's very local. If you're in a community that has wastewater treatment plants, which many of the disenfranchised communities have, there is a possibility of, and you may have to work through City Hall, there is a possibility of looking at those wastewater job retirees and seeing who they're and how they're using training to replace those that they're going to be losing. And that may be one possibility. Every couple of years, you know, for a while it was asbestos and then it was lead, and of course those are all gone and we're not doing energy anymore, so in the EPA arena. So it's almost like these trends that kind of sweep through. I think the trend in 2013 and maybe 14 will be wastewater might be the ones that we are seeing some potential. But it is a challenge.
Mike, let me just another piece is I think is the entry level positions. You know what I'm saying? You might see employment opportunities for individuals who have a bachelor's plus this kind of this kind of background. But for those that are coming through a program such as ours, employers are looking for much more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting perspective you gave, Carol Ann, on someone who's been there and you've matured. You've ridden this up, ramped up, and now you're kind of in this holding pattern. Hopefully we'll be able to submit another grant and perhaps get another re-up. You know, the one thing about this program is it is every year. So we hope that you're going to consider re-upping. Some people have and some haven't. You've done such a good job in the past. We kind of hope that you're going to try to keep this program going. Because you certainly have done an excellent job. Anyone else have any other questions of Carol Ann? I guess that is the issue that you also brought up is, as these programs ramp up and then when the funding ends, it is a tricky thing of how do you sustain yourself. And it's fortunately, it sounds like you've grabbed on to something that'll keep you going for a little while here. And plus, you've got all the other things that your community center does. So this is just one part of what you do, isn't it? I mean, this is actually a small part.
This is a major part of what Workforce does, which is the division that I run. But, we have a housing division, we have a youth division, we have a home care division. So there are other entities here at St. Nick's. But, I get about 3,000 people that come through my doors on a yearly basis, just for Workforce. So it's a large population that, we try to service.
Mm-hmm. Well,
are you a WIA service provider, or do you get any federal funding, or you pretty much operate from grants and other sources?
Yeah, it's mostly from grants and other sources.
Okay.
Foundation, right.
Which makes it
we have an FSET contract, a food stamp contract through New York State, but.
Well, Joanne, I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I'm going to put your contact information in the post-session notes. And if anyone wants to get a hold of you, particularly people who are new in writing grants, or thinking of starting a program, I think it would be really helpful because you all have done such a good job. If they can contact you and with any questions they might have regarding what you've done. And,
absolutely.
I appreciate your time today and talking to us. So,
anyone
else have the questions? We do try to keep these at 30 minutes. So we're going to have another call on October 10th, and we'll be sending out some post-session notes and some announcements for the next one for anyone who can make it. So any additional questions anyone has?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Talk
all
to
right.
You all soon.
Take it easy, everyone. All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Thank you, guys.